Not long ago, a woman was robbed while walking on the sidewalk in Cleveland, Ohio. She was the victim of the crime, and yet when the police arrived, they arrested her. Despite her lack of a criminal past, the judge set her bail at $25,000, an impossible sum for a mother of seven. This meant she had to stay in jail until her trial, which didn't come for 2 whole months. And while she was in jail, she lost her job. She and her kids suffered distress and anxiety, and her extended family all had to pitch in to keep the family together. That's the story of how the cash bail system in Cleveland nearly destroyed one woman's life and family. Now, thanks to both luck and, I think, a lot of privilege, I have never personally experienced injustice this profound. And yet, this story makes every memory of injustice in my own life feel heavier with the weight of empathy and righteous indignation. And any story like this, of power misused and abused, of systems not working like they're supposed to in ways that harm people, makes me yearn for a miracle, for a superhero, someone who can swoop in and right all sorts of wrongs. As we heard about earlier in today's service, our children this year have been learning about superheroes and holy troublemakers in religious education. They learned lessons about anti-oppression, anti-racism, and justice from the X-Men, Wonder Woman, and Guardians of the Galaxy. And then they learned the stories of some of humanity's real-life heroes from different times and places, like Rumi, Dr. Will Gaffney, and Rabbi Dana Ruttenberg. I know it might seem a little bit strange to pair Superman and Rumi together, but I will tell you, when my kids were really, really little, we used to have this little Jesus figurine that someone gave me as a joke, and my kids would line him up along with Superman and Batman and Spider-Man. I mean, they were all heroes, right? Now, superheroes are the fun main characters and stories that entertain us and let us escape the confines of our own lives for a while. But they do more than that. As Catholic theologian Terence Tilley wrote, the author of a story cannot control a story's power to reveal. In other words, whether the creators of superheroes did it intentionally or not, their characters reveal not only what their fans most wish they could do, but also what they most want to be saved from. As I explained earlier, the author of this morning's reading wrote an article for UU World Magazine in 2010 called Reclaiming Krypton. The full title of Muter's article was Reclaiming Krypton: Why a Generation That Grew Up with Buffy and the Power Rangers Will Demand a Different Unitarian Universalism. I remember reading Muter's original words 14 years ago and feeling some kind of way about a baby boomer telling me what my generation wanted from this liberal faith. But once I settled on taking his words with the largest grain of salt, I found they largely resonated. Muter makes the point that the superheroes of his adolescence were orphans, reflecting his generation's relationship with a past that felt limiting and oppressive. For example, the couple who finds Superman as a baby and raises him as their own are simple folks, they're farmers. But while they love him as their own, he is very different from them. And he has to figure out how to navigate the world and his place in it all by himself. The desire to be freed from history's limits extended even to Muter's approach to faith. He writes, Unitarian Universalism appealed to me then not as a heritage I could carry forward in the future, but as a place to start over. Sheltered from the lethal radiation of the past, I could build my own theology from scratch and figure out for myself how to save Metropolis. After the 60s, superheroes began to change. Muter argues they reflected people coming of age who were yearning not to blaze their own path, but to find some guidance along the path. In the 1970s, X-Men came out, and one thing that distinguished that series was Professor X, a mentor. The same was true of superheroes in the 80s, 90s, and early 2000s. Splinter was there to offer wisdom and guidance to the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Zordon was there for the Power Rangers. Buffy the Vampire Slayer had Giles to turn to when the going got tough. And those decades saw the embarrassing end of the Vietnam War, Reagan's trickle-down economics failure, the attacks on 9/11. Unlike the hopeful post-World War era Muter grew up in, the world of my childhood was one with problems that seemed much bigger than a single superhero with no links to the past could handle. As Muter wrote, needing to figure out how to save Metropolis from scratch with no received wisdom to build on wasn't a fantasy anymore. It was a nightmare. Somewhere, someone ought to have a wisdom worth passing on, a legacy worth living up to. This was also an era when UUs began to want more from our faith than just freedom from past theology and space for individualism. This was when UU pagan and Buddhist groups, UU Hindu and Christian and Jewish groups came into being for people interested in what our faith frees us for. It's been 14 years since Doug Muter wrote that UU World article, and in that time, the world has changed a lot. And as our children mark the completion of this year's Superhero Academy curriculum, as my kids prepare to finish this school year, it made me wonder what our kids feel they most need to be saved from in today's world. Maybe the new generation of superheroes can help us figure it out. In my house, the favorite new superhero movie has been Miles Morales, Into the Spider-Verse. In this retelling, Spider-Man is no longer a white orphan, but an Afro-Latino teenager from Brooklyn. I don't want to include any spoilers for those who haven't seen the film yet. I highly recommend it. But one of the villains is a racist schoolteacher, Mr. Chamberlain. And once Miles is bitten by the spider that gives him his superpowers, he's thrust into challenges not of his own making and saves the day only by working together with others who often doubt, undermine, and even dislike him. As Doug Muter writes in our reading this morning, if the heroes of the 90s wanted to reclaim a legacy, the heroes of today want to redeem a legacy they didn't choose but can't escape. Only the kids coming of age today will be able to tell us if this interpretation rings true. But it sure seems close. Indeed, none of us chose the world we were born into, the networks of systems that shape so much of our lives. And no matter what our ages, once we realize the immensity of all we are up against, it's only human to learn to yearn for something, for someone who doesn't have the same limits we do, who can save us from all we cannot escape by ourselves. But the climate crisis, rising authoritarianism, the increasing threat of international war, these are all way too big for a single superhero to save us from. One person can still make a difference, but the challenges of today's world are so complex and entrenched, today's heroes are going to have to work together, organize their power to set things aright. It is often said that an organized lie will always beat out disorganized truth. I'll say that again. An organized lie will always beat out disorganized truth. I feel like we are watching the truth of this statement play out in real time. The far right has organized its power for decades. And now the news is filled every day with stories about more freedoms lost, more protections struck down, more theocratic laws passed. Many people are deeply afraid of what could happen to our democracy as a result of the upcoming election. But no matter who is elected president, the threats to freedom and the rule of law will continue. They are much more powerful than one candidate. I am afraid of the world my children will inherit, and I intend to do more with that fear than just doom scroll social media and take Prilosec for my heartburn. This is why I accepted the invitation to go to an all-expenses-paid training with the Just Power Alliance a week and a half ago. This was the first training of its kind for this national network of local organizations like Action in Montgomery, which this congregation has been learning about for the last few months and will vote on whether to join at our annual meeting 2 weeks from today. It was incredible to meet people from all over the country who are working to organize the power of the people to give their communities the shape of justice. As part of the training, we went to an action organized by GCC, Greater Cleveland Congregations, to raise awareness about the injustice of the cash bail system in their city. That's where I heard the story of the woman I told you about at the beginning of this sermon. And it's because of stories like hers that UUs, Jews, Christians, and Muslims of the GCC have been researching and planning that action and the steps that will come after it for 2 years already. They've been planning their strategy to end the cash bail system in Cleveland already for 2 years, and this was just the beginning of the public rollout. The well-organized lie is that the status quo of cash bail is inevitable, is all there is the best solution. So the GCC are organizing to tell the truth and fight for a more just system to be put in place. While ending cash bail won't solve all the problems with the judicial system, it will help prevent people like the woman I told you about from having their lives destroyed. And that's something. In the 1960s, it was houses of worship who organized the power of their communities to get laws that enforced segregation struck down and civil rights legislation passed. In the 90s and earlier 2000s, it was liberal religious communities who organized to get homophobic laws struck down and marriage equality passed. Today, UUCSS, just like other UU congregations, other faith communities of different traditions, to join with other people of faith to be part of organizing our communities to fight for freedom and democracy, for justice and prosperity for the many, not just the wealthy few. It is no longer overdramatic to say that the future of our right to practice this liberal faith may be at stake. Toward the end of his 2021 blog post update, Doug Muter writes about what he thinks UU churches are called to be in the days and years ahead. Here's what he has to say. So what should a UU church be in this era? Not a place of perfect freedom for the last sons of dying planets, and not a heroic order whose oath you can take and whose mantle can be passed down to you. In the 2020s, a UU church needs to be an alchemical Athanor, a crucible where we melt our legacies down to their elements and rework them into something better. We need to account both for what has been done to us and what has been done for us. We need to be critical and grateful. Our ancestors did what they knew how to do and left us here with this collection of strength and wounds, this ledger of assets and debts. We can't start from scratch, and we can't go on like this. But we can, and we have to, start here. On this RE graduation day, let us face the truth that our children need more from us than an affirmation of their power as individuals, and hopeful stories about other individuals throughout history who changed the world. The holy troublemakers our children learned about this year did not work alone. They need more from our faith than just space to reject the old. They need this faith to help them redeem legacies of both good and bad, just and unjust history. They need us, we all need us, to be a place where we can learn to organize our power so we can redeem a world that contains the DNA of both Superman and Lex Luthor, as Doug Muter put it. Because we can only save ourselves from climate change if we save all of us. We can only save ourselves from authoritarianism if we save all of us. Our children need us. We all need us to be a church dedicated to redeeming our world, not just for us, not just with our ideas and priorities, but with and for everyone. May UUCSS continue in our unending work to become the congregation our children and their children will need us to be. Amen.